It's time for us to begin our Bible study this morning. If you would, open your Bibles to Revelation chapter 18. Revelation chapter 18. We are continuing our study of the book of Revelation, taking a chapter, a class period, working our way through. We are engaged in our study of Revelation, and as we're going through it, with the determination that we can understand the message of the book of Revelation. We may not understand every symbol, we may not understand every verse, but we can understand the message that was given. To help us do this, we need to remember some things. Number one, we need to remember the style of the book of Revelation, that is, remember how the book was written. It is a book of signs and symbols, and that tells us, the book of Revelation tells us that from the very first verse. It is the Bible's picture book, and the message is found in the visions, not in the narrative, but in the visions. Secondly, we need to remember why the book of Revelation was written. It wasn't written to help us interpret the news in the 21st century. It was written to help first century Christians who were suffering for their faith. They're wondering, is it worth it to remain faithful to God? Is it worth it to be a Christian? I'm losing my property. I'm losing my life because of this. And the book of Revelation was written to help them to understand that, yes, it is worth it, and it was written to give them not only understanding, but to help to strengthen their faith and their resolve as they faced that suffering. Revelation chapter 18, which we're going to study today, is in a block of chapters that has to do with the discussion of the fall of Rome. Rome being the enemy of God's people, the Roman Empire being the enemy of the church and of God's people. Revelation chapter 17 through the first half of chapter 19 deal with a detailed description of the destruction of the Roman Empire. I'll go out on a limb and I'll make this claim. I think of all the chapters we've studied so far in Revelation, with the exception of chapters 2 and 3 that were the letters to the seven churches, chapter 18 is one of the easiest ones to grasp. Now, if you don't feel that way when we're through with class today, then we'll talk about it afterwards. But to me, I think it's one of the easier of the chapters to grasp. What it is, it's a picture of the fall of Rome. It's a picture of the destruction, the final and complete destruction of the enemies of God's people here upon the earth. And so that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a picture that is painted of the end of an empire. Verse 1 says, "After these things I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory." Now, we've had angels introduced to us as we have studied through the book of Revelation, and we've had strong angels described, but this one, it says specifically that he has great authority. So here's a great and powerful angel, but this is the first time we've seen this, that the earth was illuminated with his glory. That tells us that John saw an angel who had an important message that could not be ignored. Angels were messengers. Angels are messengers of God. Here's one that has a message that simply cannot be ignored. Get your attention. Well, verses 2 and 3. Verse 2, "And he cried," the angel, "and he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, is fallen." Now, we've heard that before, back in chapter 14 and at verse 8. This message was given, Babylon is fallen. Well, of course, ancient Babylon had already fallen by this time. But here we understand Babylon has reference to Rome, to the Roman Empire. And when this was written, when John saw this, Rome was very much in power. But we made the point back in chapter 14, and we'll make it again here. It is written, or it's stated in the present perfect tense, Babylon the Great is fallen. And not that it was at that moment, but it's worded that way to emphasize the certainty of this future action. God has decreed that Rome is going to fall. That means in the eyes of God, they are as good as fallen already. Babylon is fallen, is fallen. And we know that Babylon is used here to refer to Rome, to refer to the enemies of God's people, because the ancient city of Babylon and the first century city and empire of Rome have so much in common. Both cities were the capital of world empires. Both of them oppressed and persecuted God's people. Both of them promoted sin. And both of them thought of themselves as secure and invincible. And there was this pride and this false sense of security about them. But here, Babylon is fallen. It has reference to Rome. And then the verse goes on to talk about the desolation of the future desolation of this empire, and has become a dwelling place of demons and a prison for every foul spirit and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. The idea here again is one of desolation. Think about the rock. Think about Alcatraz. Well, when it was in its operation, the only thing that was on that island were the worst of the worst. That was a place where you would find the worst, the absolute bottom dwellers of society. And that's kind of the idea here. It's Babylon, or Rome, this great city, that the capital of this world empire, has become nothing but a desolation. Only the worst of the worst are found there. Worse than a ghost town. Only the worst things are found there. It's desolate. Verse 3, here's the reason. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. Notice that Rome was not content to sin just by herself, but she enticed all the nations of the world to drink with her and to join with her in her fornication and in her uncleanness. If you wanted to survive as a nation during the time of the Roman Empire, you got friendly with the empire. You did what you had to do in order to remain in their good graces. And part of that was the implementation of Caesar worship. You worshiped the leader of Rome as a god, or you didn't last. And that's what was happening to the Christians. They refused to do it, and they were being persecuted. They were being killed. Well, that was the wine of the wrath of her fornication. That was the enticement. Remember in the previous chapter, we saw Rome as a harlot who was enticing the nations around about her. Well, here is her guilt. She's not content to sin just by herself, but she has enticed everyone else to join her in her sins. Verse 4 says, "And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive of her plagues." This is very much like other passages that we read in both the Old and New Testament. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, "Come out from among the world, to remain separate, do not touch what is unclean, and I'll receive you." That's the warning given in 2 Corinthians 6, which is a quotation of an Old Testament passage. 1 Peter at chapter 2 and at verse 11, "We are to live as strangers and pilgrims upon this earth. We are to abstain from fleshly lust, which war against the soul." Come out from among her. And God's people at this time weren't all doing that. They weren't all coming out from the world. If you hearken back to chapter 2, where we studied the seven letters to the churches, the church in Pergamos and the church in Thyatira both had elements within them that compromised with the world. And they wanted to enjoy the sinful things of the world. And so that they were told to repent. They were told to stop that. And here this message is found again. God has marked this nation for destruction, and God's people will go down with it if they don't come out. If they don't come out from among that nation. What did God do before he destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah? Who did he remove out? Lot. He removed righteous Lot and his wife and two daughters out of that city before he destroyed it. And so here is another call from God that reminds us of that. Come out from among them. I'm going to destroy them. Don't be swept away with that destruction. Verse 5, "For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities." When I read this passage, I thought about Sodom and Gomorrah. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 18. Genesis chapter 18, the Lord comes to visit Abraham, and two angels come with him and visit Abraham, and God discloses to Abraham what he's going to do. Genesis chapter 18, verses 20 and 21. And the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me, and if not, I will know. Now, God knew exactly what was happening in Sodom and Gomorrah. He didn't have to go down and physically walk the streets to know. But in this passage, we have the message from God that His judgment is just and right. He doesn't just pour out wrath because He wants to pour out wrath. He pours out wrath because it is deserved. Because the cry, the wickedness of those cities of Sodom and Gomorrah was so great that He had heard it. It had come to Him in heaven. He sent to make sure that the report was true, and then judgment was to come. Now, with that in mind, look here at verse 5 again. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Here is a nation that has sinned so greatly. One symbol or one figure that has been used prior to this is the filling up of a cup of wrath. It's been filled up, and now it's running over. It's time for them to be destroyed. They've reached their limit. Here's another image that we have, that the sins have literally piled up all the way up to heaven. They can't sin anymore. They've reached their limit. It's gone all the way up to God in heaven. Verse 6, render to her just as she rendered to you, and repay her double according to her works in the cup which she has mixed. Mix double for her. Here she had a cup. Remember that harlot was pictured in the previous chapter of riding that scarlet beast and had a golden cup. But it was full of abominations. It was full of filth. Rome had this cup, and it was full of power, and it was full of the pursuit of sin. But God was going to take that cup and was going to mix their wrath in that cup and give it back to them in the same measure. Commentators, it's interesting. We look at verse 6. Repay her double according to her works in the cup which she has mixed. Mix double for her. I read commentaries and it said, well, that doesn't mean double the wrath. That means the certainty of the wrath. I'll go with what it says. Double the wrath. Double the wrath poured out on her. She tormented my people. She persecuted and killed my people. That's what she has coming to her. And you mix it up double for her. You give her double the wrath. Why? Verse 7, again, in the measure that she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in the same measure give her torment and sorrow. So here she has heaped luxury upon herself, and she's done it at the expense of God's people, the shedding of the blood of God's people. And so this wrath is going to come upon her. And then she says in her pride, I said as a queen, and am no widow, and will not see sorrow. Here's her pride. Here's her arrogance. Verse 8, therefore, her plagues will come in one day. Now, remember that phrase right there, one day. That's going to reappear several times in the rest of the chapter. Keep that in mind. Therefore, her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she will be utterly burned with fire. For strong is the Lord who judges her. If you're in the habit of making notes or highlighting verses, I believe this last phrase right here in verse 8 really is the key to the whole chapter, or is a very important statement found in the entire chapter. Rome has met her match. She's been able to exert power over all these other nations of the earth, but now she has met her match. For strong is the Lord who judges her. And by the way, strong is the Lord who judges us. We need to remember that as well. Now we go to another section in Revelation, verses 9 through 20. And in this section, we see how the world responds to the fall of Rome. There are three individuals or three groups that are mentioned. First are the kings of the earth, and second are the merchants who make money off of Rome, and third are the shipmasters who bring their goods into Rome to sell. All of them, we see that they weep and they mourn as a result of Rome's fall, but we see that it's for selfish reasons, not because they are sorry for the people of Rome. So as we go through, we'll look at these different groups. First is the kings. The kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, "Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come." We've seen the kings mentioned before. They were mentioned in the previous chapter. These are the kings that give their authority unto the harlot or unto Rome. These would have been the other nations that made up a part of the Roman Empire. And they went along with it and they received authority from Rome. And of course, they enjoyed the luxuries of Rome. They enjoyed the wealth that Rome gave them. So they were guilty. They were guilty, but whenever they saw Rome fall, then they know they've lost their power, and they know they've lost their luxury. They know they've lost their wealth. And so they weep and they lament when they see the smoke of her burning. Again, this is all figurative, but you can picture in your mind a city that has been destroyed, that is on fire. And here they are standing at a distance. Now this is going to, with all three groups, they're all three going to be standing at a distance for fear of her torment. They're not willing to get involved to help. They're standing at a distance. They see Rome fall. It's a terrible thing, but they're not dare going to get near to help because they don't want to get caught up in what has happened to Rome. So they're not such good friends after all. Here they are standing at a distance saying, "Alas, alas, that great city." How could a mighty city like this fall? And in the first century, if you lived in the first century, and you saw the power of Rome, you'd ask the same thing. This nation's going to last forever. This empire's going to last forever. Nothing could ever happen to this. Oh, yes, it has fallen. Verse 11, "And the merchants of the earth," here's the second group, "the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore." They're not weeping and mourning because all these people have died. They're not weeping and mourning because this nation is gone. They're weeping and mourning because they lost their customer. They're not making any money any longer. And then it goes down through verses 12 and 13 of the different merchandise that they were selling there in Rome. And again, we see the luxury of this nation at the expense of God's people. Merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones and pearls, fine linen and purple, silk and scarlet, every kind of citron wood, every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object of most precious wood, bronze, iron, and marble, and cinnamon and incense, fragrant oil and frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots, and bodies and souls of men. That'd be slavery there at the very end. Here were the things that were bought and sold in Rome that made money for these merchants. Well, their customer is gone. Their way of life is gone, and so they mourn. "The fruit that you're so longed for has gone from you, and all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more at all. The merchants of these things who became rich by her will stand," again, notice, "will stand at a distance for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing." Here's this great nation that has fallen. No, we're not going to get close enough to help, but there goes our money. There goes our customer. There goes our way of life. And so they're weeping and wailing, saying, "Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls." There goes our way of life. There goes our money. Verse 17 says, "For in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing." And again, this is that 1 hour that is mentioned, how quickly this nation has fallen. We'll talk about that 1 hour in just a moment. Verse 17 goes on to mention a third group, and that's the shipmaster. Every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea, again, they stood at a distance. These would be the ones who bring all the things from all over the world to Rome, for Rome to purchase, for Rome to take, and then again spread out to another place. Well, Rome's gone. The city's gone. There's no place for them to sell their goods any longer. There's no place to take them to any longer. So they've lost their way of life as well. They have lost their wealth. And they cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, "What is like this great city? Here it has fallen. It has fallen in 1 hour or one day. And the idea here of 1 hour or one day, that it has fallen. We know that Rome didn't fall literally in 1 hour. We know it didn't fall in one day. But again, here it's used to talk not only about the certainty of the fall of this nation, but the unexpected nature of it. Again, in the first century, if you'd seen the Roman Empire, you'd have thought, nothing's going to happen to this empire. This is great and this is powerful. There's no way it's ever going to come to an end. And God's people, you go back to chapter 6, verses 10 and 11, how long, O Lord, are you going to let this happen? They saw no hope. They saw no end in sight. Well, it's going to come and it's going to be like 1 hour and it's going to be gone. That's the use of this figure. Again, talking about the certainty of the end of this nation, this enemy nation of God's people. They cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what is like this great city? How could this city have fallen? That's the idea that's found here. In verse 19, they threw dust on their heads and cried out, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth. Notice again why they're upset. It's not because people have lost their life. It's because they've lost their customer. They've lost their way of life. For in 1 hour, she is made desolate. So all of that is said. That's the reaction of the world. We're not told the reaction of Rome itself. We're told the reaction of her friends, her allies, the people who benefited from her. They're all mourning. They are all crying about this. But God's people are told to do what? To rejoice. Here verse 20 kind of stands out as a contrast to all the rest of this chapter. All these people, they're mourning and they're weeping, but God's people are told to rejoice. Now that doesn't sound very much like God, does it? To rejoice at the misfortune of another? Is that what the Scriptures tell us to do? No. Again, here's a book of signs and symbols. This is figurative. This is the enemy of God's people. They're losing their lives because of Rome and because of the Roman Empire. God is finally going to bring them to an end. And when God brings them to an end, there's going to be the end of that persecution. There's going to be the end of that opposition. There's going to be the end of that fear. And in that, there is the reason to rejoice. And there's something else. If you would go back to chapter 6, and I made mention of this a moment ago, in chapter 6, where the seals are broken, this was the first cycle of seven that we had, the seven seals that were broken. The fifth seal, Revelation chapter 6 and at verse 10, verse 9 says that the fifth seal was broken or opened, and underneath the altar, John saw the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. Of course, they were slain at the hands of the Roman Empire. Verse 10 says, and they cried with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? Well, chapter 18 is giving the answer to that question. I'm going to avenge this nation that is hurting you. I'm going to destroy them. The smoke of their destruction is going to be seen by all. And the whole world is going to mourn. But you'll rejoice, because I will finally avenge your blood. You will not have died for nothing. I will finally avenge your blood. And this vision, and especially verse 20 here, would have given comfort to these Christians in the first century who were suffering so terribly for their faith. The rest of the chapter, verses 21 through 24, gives a figurative description of the end of Rome. Here, so far, we've had her burning, that the city is burning, and the people, her friends, are weeping and wailing and throwing dust on their heads and all. But there's another figure that is found here in verse 21. Then a mighty angel took up a stone, like a great millstone, and threw it into the sea, saying, thus with violence the great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found anymore. Let's pause right there and look at that. Again, we're not talking about literal Babylon. We're talking about Rome, the enemies of God's people. But John sees an angel, a mighty angel, and he's got a millstone, which would have been an enormous stone. And he throws it into the sea. He doesn't drop it into the sea. He throws it into the sea. And it is a figure. It is a figure to show, thus with violence, the great city Babylon shall be thrown down. You think about what happens whenever you throw a big rock into the water. There's that big splash at the point of impact. There's the noise. The water comes back down and goes everywhere. The water ripples and goes all over the place. But what happens to the object that you throw in the water? Well, it sinks down to the bottom and isn't found any longer. And pretty soon, the water gets calm again, and it's just like nothing had ever happened. And figuratively, that's what's going to happen to Rome. Rome is going to be thrown down, and she's going to disappear forever. With great violence, with a great impact, it's going to be gone, and it won't be found any longer. Now, this phrase right here, shall not be found anymore. You can go and visit the city of Rome today. Maybe some people here have. You can go and visit the city of Rome today, and you can go and visit the ruins that were built prior to the first century. They're still there. So, physically, literally, did this city vanish from the face of the earth? No. But the empire, the Roman Empire that destroyed or tried to destroy Christianity, the empire that the political empire that killed Christians and was opposed to the church, it's gone. It's gone. Now, there's still opposition to the truth, and there's still opposition to Christians. It can be found in different places in the world, but not in the form of a world empire like what existed in the first century. It's gone. That type of opposition is gone and shall not be found anymore. So that's what's meant. No, we can go visit Rome today, and we can visit those places that existed in the first century. But that Roman Empire and those Caesars who demanded to be worshipped as gods, that's gone. God took that out of the way. Verse 22, again, the desolation of this city is described. The sound of the harpist, musicians, flutist, and trumpeter shall not be heard in you anymore. No craftsman of any craft shall be found in you anymore. And the sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you anymore. It's a ghost town. There's nothing there. Verse 23, the light of a lamp shall not shine in you anymore, and the voice of a bridegroom and bride shall not be heard in you anymore. Desolation. No activity at all in that Roman Empire. It's ended. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, for by your sorcery all the nations were deceived. So think about that phrase for just a moment. By your sorcery, what the Roman Empire in the first century, in the time of Domitian, they insisted that they be worshipped as gods. And they had the power, they had the military power and the political power to back up that threat. You worship us, you align yourself with us, or we'll destroy you. Of course, the opposite of that is true. You align yourself with us, and you'll fill your pockets. You align yourself with us, and you'll be great. And so here, notice, your merchants were great men of the earth. Rome made them great, but did so by the enforcement of Rome's own way. Rome did not try to do good. Rome simply existed for itself and exerted and used its power and its influence just for itself and not for the good of God. And verse 24, the last verse in the chapter, in her was found the blood of prophets and saints and of all who were slain on the earth. The Roman Empire was guilty of the blood of Christians. And so the punishment that came upon her was just. You remember in the previous chapter, in chapter 17 and at verse 6, whenever John saw this harlot riding on the beast, he saw that she was drunk on the blood of the saints. She had that guilt. The empire had the guilt. Now, the empire, the Roman Empire that existed, it had that authority and it had that power. And it could have stopped the persecution, but it didn't. In fact, it spearheaded that persecution. And because the empire had the blood of Christians on its hands, then it was deserving of the wrath that God poured forth. So again, what we have in this chapter, we have apocalyptic language. It's a book of signs, it's a book of symbols, but what it depicts is the sure and the devastating end of this oppressive empire. It will not last forever. They will answer for what they've done. God will avenge his saints. And that's the message that would have been understood by these Christians who were suffering in the first century. What we can get from this is that God is in control. God is in control of all things, that nations rise and fall according to his will and by his providence and his power, and that we serve a God who knows the sins of the world. We serve a God who calls upon us to come out and be separate from the world. And we serve a God who is, again, verse 8, for strong is the Lord who judges her. So there's some good things we can draw from this chapter. We've got a few moments that are left. We'll open it up to discussion. Same messages for us, that's right. We're not suffering at the hands of the Roman Empire, but we're suffering. That's right. And we know that God will avenge. That's right. Sure. We've made the point as we've gone through, while this was written for the saints of the first century and written about the Roman Empire, the things there we can apply to every time period that has followed. There are truths that are established that apply, and that certainly applies as well. That's right. And even if another world power arises that persecutes Christianity, we've got the book of Revelation that tells us what God will do about that. That's right. Well, again, I come back to verse 8, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. We can't stand up against God. That's right. And in the nation is not weakened, it's utterly destroyed and removed from the face of the earth. That's right. Well, like I said, the persecution hasn't vanished from the earth. It's no longer enforced by a world empire, because we don't have a world empire today like that of Rome. It still exists, but Satan being able to control a world empire to oppose God's people and Christianity, he doesn't have that any longer. But he has those who do his bidding, and nations that will oppose and make it a policy of their government to oppose Christianity. That very much exists in our world today. That's right. Just not on the scale of what we see in the first century with the Roman Empire. But yes, the principles here is very, very much applied to us. Right, that's right. Again, God's in control. We can thank God for that. That's right. All right, appreciate everyone's attention and participation. Wednesday, chapter 19. Thank you very much.